This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic Drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now, the first debate between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton is Monday, and in a lot of ways, it's the moment we've been waiting for. The race appears to have tightened dramatically in the last month, according to all the polls, and whoever you plan to vote for, you'll probably be watching. My colleague Jill Lepore is a professor of history at Harvard, as well as a staff writer at The New Yorker, and she's been writing a lot about the election, trying to bring that historian's eye to the campaign, maybe the strangest campaign of our lives. The way Jill sees it, there's even more at stake in this debate than you might think.
I am sure a lot of people are very surprised to learn that you supported raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour.
No, wait a minute. I have stood on the debate stage with Senator Sanders eight prior times.
Excuse me.
I have said the
Secretary,
exact same
Senator,
thing.
Please.
When you think about it, political debate has been having a terrible century.
Let's do it.
If you're both screaming at each other, the viewers won't be able to hear either of you.
Okay.
So
please don't talk over each other.
Go
responding.
Ahead.
Certainly since the turn of the century, there's been gridlock in American politics. Congress and the presidency together can't get much done. Lately, the Senate hasn't been able to hold hearings about a new Supreme Court justice nominee. The House can't talk about guns. There are all kinds of issues that are just off the table. But there's also a problem with American political conversation. People have a hard time talking to one another about politics, not just politician to politician, but more worryingly, neighbor to neighbor, colleague to colleague, cousin to cousin. Arguing is something that people learn by watching other people do it. And more Americans learn how to argue about politics by watching people argue online. And you can see that. You can hear it if you listen to debates as they've been recorded across the last century. And I think that makes it feel like in the run-up to the Clinton-Trump debates, there's more at stake, I think, than just the election itself. There was a real concern during the primary debates, both the Democratic, but especially the Republican primary debates, which had many more candidates and so had a more circus-like atmosphere, that there had been a kind of deterioration of public discourse.
Look at those hands. Are they small hands? And he referred to my hands. If they're small, something else must be small. I guarantee you there's no problem. I guarantee. All right. Okay. Moving on.
The kinds of things that were said in some of those primary debates had just never been said before by presidential candidates on record in any case. So there's a measurable coarsening of the discourse, and that's one thing. But there's also just kind of a general lack of intellectual and political exchange among the candidates. That's a different factor.
I know what's happening on the economy. You don't know it.
Well, then answer the economy.
They didn't actually really exchange views. They really didn't challenge one another's political commitments or economic plans. A lot of people I talked to, and this became a kind of commonplace. You'd sort of hear it at the corner grocery store. Oh, my God, did you watch last night? I had to send the kids to bed. It was so too appalling.
Don't worry about it, little Marco, I will.
All right, well, let's hear big dog.
It sounds like you're in a coliseum before a very bloodthirsty crowd.
Mr. Trump, I'd like to ask you a policy question.
Doesn't
your proposed tax cut...
And that's why the people in Florida do not like them.
Candidates for office in the United States have been debating on debate stages since the founding of the United States. Debate is central to political campaigns and has been from the beginning. Face-to-face debates in a stage where people can see you create one kind of debate culture. But there was a really big turn in American politics with the dawn of the radio in the 19-teens and 20s when political debates were staged to be broadcast. And Senate races, congressional seats, town hall issues were vetted on the radio. People staged formal debates. It was a really interesting moment in the history of the relationship between technology and politics because the radio creates a kind of community, and it's a different sort of community than the town square, the public common. It's a virtual public common in the same way online is now, but it's a much more controlled media space than the internet is. And this put pressure on presidential aspirants and incumbents to agree to debate on the radio. But FDR set the precedent of refusing to do that. FDR was a great user of the radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
I mean, he's known for his fireside chats.
My friend, I want to talk for a few minutes.
He projected himself into the kitchens and parlors and living rooms and barns and firesides of Americans across the country, and it was a hugely significant element of his presidency.
I want to tell you what has been done in the last few days and why it was done and what the next steps are going to be.
But he insisted that he couldn't debate because he was a sitting president and he might let slip a state secret. So political opponent Senator Arthur Vandenberg had given a series of rebuttals to speeches made by FDR.
Then coming intimately to the realities, Mr. Roosevelt, may I respectfully ask what you said about taxes when accepting
and
your nomination?
These kind of clever political wonks, radio geeks, spliced together pieces of FDR's speeches and pieces of Vandenberg's rebuttals.
But, Mr. Roosevelt, unfortunately, this fear is not nameless.
And created a debate, a pastiche, a kind of patch together, stitched together debate, and sent it out to the networks to play.
You nourish this fear in almost every speech you make.
A lot of stations refuse to play it for good reason. It's an unethical thing to do. But it suggests just how powerfully the demand was for a sitting president, for a candidate, you know, running for re-election, to be asked to respond to his political opposition.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. For the past
eventually, real debates between presidential candidates were broadcast.
Between Governor Thomas E. Dewey of New York and former Governor Harold E. Stassen of Minnesota.
So in 1948, Dewey and Stassen were both running for the Republican nomination, and they agreed to debate in Oregon, and the debate was broadcast. They agreed to an Oxford-style debate, so the resolution was, in this case, a question, and it was, should the Communist Party be outlawed?
I consider it to be clear that these communist organizations are not really political parties. They are actually fifth columns. They are quisling cliques.
They stuck to that topic for the entire 60-minute broadcast. That's how Oxford-style debates work.
Now, I find that the difficulty here tonight is that Mr. Stassen has not adhered to his subject or his statement.
So these guys might quibble over the rules, but, you know, we're not hearing Dewey call Stassen Little Harry.
But the fact of the matter is, he is in grievous error.
We think about now, could you really listen to 60 minutes of two people just discussing a single political issue? Well, certainly people did then. One of the interesting measures, I just love this little factoid, that there was no use of the telephone during these debates. There's long-distance calls, which are really the only calls that are registered. People just didn't answer the phone when it rang, and they didn't make any calls because people just sat by the radio and listened to these debates. It was gripping to hear people at length defend a position and attack a political opponent for his ideas. So my hands-down favorite moment in the history of broadcast debate is a program called America's Town Meeting of the
Air. Welcome once again to historic Town Hall in New York City and another free discussion by free American citizens.
That debuted on NBC's network in 1935 and stayed on the air into the 1950s. It was a radio show that invited a panel of experts to debate a single topic for the evening, but it was broadcast live from a big lecture hall, and the audience was invited to participate. And the debates were really consequential, and they got pretty deep. The program was an unexpected hit, really builds on what in the 1930s was a real nostalgia for a pastoral American past, the New England town meeting, a sense of a smaller, more intimate world. And so there's just this kind of loveliness to it and then a deep substance. And there's this one night, though, where the boundaries of debate are being breached. And you hear an American in the audience, just some New Yorker, it's a New Yorker, pretty much policing the debate.
Question of Mr. Denny.
Yes?
Why was the policy changed to permit the personal abuse by a speaker supposed to discuss matter?
And saying, what I've heard here tonight is people actually attacking one another personally instead of discussing the issues, and I want to know, what gives? That's not allowed. That's not allowed.
There's a difference between an attack being
made anonymously. It's a really good counterpoint. I mean, there's no golden age of debate in American history. We haven't been falling off the standards of our political discourse ever since the Constitutional Convention. There are ups and there are downs, and there are good moments and there are bad moments. This is, I think, right now, a pretty bad moment. So the first debate between Clinton and Trump is going to be held on September 26th, which just happens to be the anniversary of the very first televised presidential debate, which was between Richard M. Nixon and John F. Kennedy in September of 1960. And people remember that debate for all kinds of reasons. It was a landmark in the history of television. It was a landmark in the history of presidential politics. But it also established a convention that people hosting presidential debates have never managed to escape, much to their great regret. Both Kennedy and Nixon insisted that they would only field questions from reporters.
The first question to Senator Kennedy from Mr. Fleming. Senator, the vice president in his campaign has said that you are naive and at times immature. He has raised the question of leadership. On this issue,
I think they thought, and this has been the case with subsequent presidential candidates and their campaign managers, that the candidates would look bad if they were fighting one another, if they were talking to one another directly. You could easily come across as mean. And somehow, if you were in a stronger position as a candidate, you'd be almost giving the gift of your attention to the other candidate. So by the time we get to 1988, Dan Rather introducing the debate between George H.W. Bush and Michael Dukakis is almost a little sheepish about it.
Michael Dukakis. One dictionary definition of the word debate is to discuss opposing reasons, to argue. And that is some of what will be happening here tonight. This will not be a debate in the sense of the word is often used in the English language, because all of this is so tightly controlled by the candidates themselves and their managers. These things have developed over the years into what some people believe can more accurately be described as a joint campaign appearance or an orchestrated news conference.
So the moderators over the years and the sponsors of the debates really kept trying to move the ball a little bit further down the field towards a formal debate. And in 2008, Jim Lehrer had established rules with the campaigns. They were going to try to get the candidates. This was Barack Obama and John McCain. To clash. This is what's known in formal debate as the clash, to have two candidates speak to one another, articulate their ideas, challenge one another. And McCain just refused to do it.
10 days ago, John said that the fundamentals of the economy are sound.
Say it directly to him.
I do not think that they are.
Say it directly to him.
Well, John, 10 days ago, you said that the fundamentals of the economy are sound. And
are you afraid I couldn't hear him?
I'm just determined to get you all to talk to each other. I'm going to try.
I spoke to a couple of people who've moderated presidential debates, and they had fascinating things to say. Bob Schieffer had a really interesting insight. He said that if you read the transcripts of the primary debates this cycle, they read like online comments threads. So one guy says, that's stupid, and another guy says, no, you're stupid. And then the first guy says, no, you're stupid. It's a descent into madness. And while the commission and people who sponsor the debates would really like the candidates to talk directly to one another, to clash in the classic sense of debate, You have to imagine that what Clinton and Trump have prepared by way of direct confrontation is a litany of insults.
As I say, crooked Hillary, crooked
no
Hillary.
No self-discipline, no self-control, no sense of history.
She's as crooked as they come.
I actually think there's a good argument to be made that as messy and as maddening as these presidential debates will be that are coming up this fall, I think it's a real opportunity for voters to ask themselves, what does it mean to speak past one another? What are the consequences when the two parties are so fractured within themselves and so unable to find common ground? We know a lot about how partisanship and polarization have interfered with Congress's ability to get anything done. People have a lot of ideas about what this era of polarization has meant for the Obama presidency. But when we sit down and watch those debates starting on September 26th and we see what we have become politically as a nation, I think there's a real moment there for sitting up straight, getting a little frustrated, and wondering what are some other ways that people could be speaking to one another about politics.
That's Jill Lepore, staff writer and professor of history. And you can find her articles about politics and everything she's been writing about the election at NewYorkerRadio.org.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.